You used him as a guinea pig.
Okay. All right, let's start out very simple. Where were you born?
Right on this same acreage, right? About a mile over this way.
Home. Really? And you already said that you had, were your parents farmers then?
Yes, my parents were farmers.
You had 9 brothers and sisters?
I had 4 brothers and 5 sisters.
Oh my goodness.
And a rocket farm to raise them on, but he did it. He had a lot of faith.
That's what it takes, huh?
A lot of hard work and a lot of faith.
Well, tell me, what was raised on the farm? Tell me anything you can remember about your childhood.
My father tried to raise tobacco, but this clay land does not suit tobacco. So he finally diversified some, and he raised cotton and a truck farm when I got old enough to realize what was going on. Mm-hmm. So we mainly made our living off of cotton and cattle and truck farm some in the summertime when there was, it was a market, ready to market.
Did you raise cattle for beef cattle or milk? Dairy?
We had both.
You had both?
We didn't have, we sold some beef and we raised our own pork and had cows for our own milk supply. You need quite a bit for 10 children.
I suspect so, yes.
We drank a lot of milk. We made our own butter, raised our own pork.
I was going to ask if you raised pigs.
Raised a lot of pigs. We didn't raise any for sale, but we raised it for our own consumption. And raised our own wheat and made our own flour.
Oh.
So it wasn't a lot to buy at the grocery store like we know it today. Didn't have electricity. We had kerosene lamps. We used wood for fuel. So your necessity for having ready cash wasn't quite as great as it is nowadays.
No.
You didn't have to go to the grocery store on Friday afternoons or Saturday morning. So your income was low, which you didn't need as much.
I understand there was a general store close by. Was there?
Yes. There's one right down the road at Dawson's Crossroad. I think that's what gave it the original name. There was a store there at one time. I can remember the time it was operating, and then there was another one in the west of here, the Holmeses. Gene Holmes ran a community grocery store. There's small grocery stores all around.
Did you have to go for anything, coffee, for instance, or sugar?
Coffee and sugar, matches, and oil, lamp oil.
Oil, so it'd be just a few.
Yeah. And the way we did it in those days, if you didn't have the money, you'd carry what you did have and swap it for.
Ah.
Yeah, that was a part of my life I remember very well. Is walking to the country store and carrying a bucket full of eggs, packed in cottonseed or anything that would keep them from breaking. And you'd walk to the store and the storekeeper would buy your eggs and then you'd buy his coffee, sugar, matches, whatever you need. But you really didn't have any money. You just swapped your produce for his merchandise. And so you get oil for the lamps, and sugar and coffee. You carry out 5 dozen eggs and just about buy your week's supply of necessity.
Really?
And of course, if there's a little left over, you got a little treat.
Yeah.
Me and my brothers would get a few pieces of candy. Later on, we picked up the great habit of cigarettes, and we'd sell eggs and buy cigarettes and learn how to smoke, you know, get sick on the way home. I remember that very well, too. The first cigarettes you ever smoked will make you sick.
That's what I
hear. You know, that's the way I learned how to smoke. You know. Wished I'd never learned that part of it. But that was the way of life, and you didn't feel deprived because everybody was in the same situation you were.
Yeah.
I've had people say to me, how in the world did your father raise 10 children on this land? It's so rocky and it's not too fertile. I said, well, it was hard. But I said, you didn't worry about it because you didn't have anything. Your neighbors didn't have anything either. So something, you don't miss anything you never had.
That's true.
The luxuries of life as we know it now certainly wasn't there. Some of my older sisters was, we did manage to send them to college. Well, I went to university over here, and was she was a teacher, and I had two more that went to a teacher's training school up at Lexington. They were certified teachers. I believe then that was a little bit different from major in education now. You had went to a teacher's training school, they call it then, and you come out with a B certificate, which would entitle you to teach in the local school, so a lot of the teachers only had a B certificate.
Did you go to school yourself here?
Yes, we had a 1 through 7 in the neighborhood, and then when you finished the 7th grade, you went to the high school in Hillsboro. Of course, we had, when I came along, we had the transportation. We had the public bus system, you know. I mean, the school bus.
School bus.
But my earlier, I was the youngest of the 10, so my older sisters and brothers had to, the oldest ones had to board in Hillsboro to go to high school. Yes, they had the room and board. Had to rent a room and father, and most of the time the boarding house would furnish the meals along with the room for them. I believe going rate then was probably $10 to $15 a month. But it was quite an expense considering the amount of income you had. But my older sisters did do that. And they got a formal education that way.
Your parents?
They provided.
Did they consider it pretty important then?
It was, yes, they did consider it important. Because it was a real sacrifice to do that. But they felt it was worth it. And I'm sure it was.
Well, you mentioned a couple of things about growing up on that farm. You said it was hard. Can you tell me something about the day you would have had as a child? Did you have responsibilities of your own?
Oh, sure. You know, to start with, you had to. First thing in the morning was get the milk supply. That meant go to the barn and milk the cows. And that was your milk supply for the day, and that maybe 2 days. And then you had your responsibility of preparing wood for the, you cook stove was with wood.
Did that heat the house also?
No, you had, he had 6 fireplaces at the big chimneys. We had a 2-story house. We had a nice old homestead, but it was, you know, it's amazing. They say the houses, you hear people talk about the old houses when they're built in the good old, the good way, you know, when it's well built, but nothing compared to the way a house is built now and the way it was built then, because it's much better now, much better.
Oh, you think they're better
now? Oh, I sure do. Now, the material, the quality of the material might have been, a little better, but the construction, the way it was constructed is better now than it was then.
Cool.
And I'm thinking now about subfloor and storm sheeting, insulation. That's much better now than it was back 50, 60 years ago. Because the house that I lived in didn't have any insulation and no storm sheeting on the sides, you know, and then you'd get a little cool air through the cracks. Yeah, it was really drafty. Sure was.
Is that house still standing?
No, it's been torn down.
Now, did your brothers and sisters, you all had chores, I suppose?
Oh, yeah. And someone was responsible. You had, your duties were delegated. One had responsibility to do one thing, another one had another one. You had to milk the cows, feed the chickens, get in the wood, feed the pigs, the hogs, and my parents, my daddy, and the older boys was responsible for the horse. Everything was horsepower.
Oh, we had horses.
We had horses, mules. We worked them. That was what we cultivated the fields with, plowed the fields.
Had a lot of animals to take care of.
We had a lot. A horse, or a mule especially, was the backbone of the farm back in those days. We call it horsepower, but it's actually mule power. I think there's still a place in that they use mules, as pack mules, you know, and, but they're a valuable animal, and they're a beast of burden. They know what they put you in for, I think, plus the work, and they did that part.
Well, now, was your mother, would you say that your father was in charge of the outside work and your mother in charge of the inside work, or did they divide up the chores?
No, my father was in charge of the outside work. My mother was in charge of the inside work. With babies coming right regular, she had her hands full inside. Now, she helped a lot in the garden.
Garden.
And she prepared and picked the vegetables. You ate out of your garden. You just about fed your family out. Now, she would do that, and she churned the milk and made the butter. But he was responsible for the outside work. She never had to do any of the field work.
Mm-hmm. What about your sisters? Did they do field work?
Everybody helped, yeah.
Did your sisters help in the fields, too?
Yes, of course they wasn't as good a help as the boys, you know.
Shoulder and arm strength is kind of missing.
Yeah. Well, but my sisters all helped, especially you did a lot of what I call hoe work. You know, you had your horsepower and your older people and your father led the way. And then the children, the younger ones, and the girls followed up with it. If you've ever farmed or ever seen a farm, I don't think we see any of that today, but we had the horsepower and walking plows.
Mm-hmm.
And you cultivated the fields, and then the little ones came behind, and if you covered up a vine or a stalk of corn, it was their responsibility to straighten it up.
I see.
And if there's grass around there that you couldn't plow up, it was your responsibility to dig it up. And so every bit of the cultivation in the field had to be followed by handwork.
Mm-hmm.
And that was usually the younger boys and the girls. Mm-hmm. It was light of work. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, now when your older sisters went off to school, had the younger ones grown up enough to...
Just about. I was the youngest, and I can recall it, and you had to be on up in close to 10, 12 before you was considered a good hand,
mm-hmm.
or a good worker. And, of course, strangely enough, you looked forward to the time that you could lay down the hoe and pick up the plow, you know, because you was reaching manhood, you know.
I suppose it would be cool.
And so, cycle that sort of took care of itself. I mean, when one left, there was somebody else to take its place. When the girls went off to school, it didn't leave you in too bad a situation. Not with 10. You had somebody going
some
in.
Replacements, then.
The replacement was automatic.
Well, you mentioned hard work, Mr. Bob. You also said you managed it on faith.
Yes.
Could you tell me something about the kind of faith you had?
Well, you'd have to see the land and see the hardships. You had to face. I would say that anybody that lived through those circumstances had to have faith.
Did he have faith in himself as a man?
Oh, yes. He was not a ill-mannered man, but he had a lot of determination and a lot of lot of strength.
Did he, would you also say that he had faith in his wife?
Oh, yes.
Gave her a lot of responsibility and had 10 children.
Oh, yes, he did. She was, they worked together. They had to. They both did their part. And they was faithful.
Was there a church in the end?
Oh, yeah.
Were they church people?
Yes.
Did that mean a great deal to you when you were growing up, or was...
Yes. It sure did. I remember riding the wagon to church many times. That was quite a chore, getting all the kids together and cleaned up and bathed and dressed and getting them in the wagon and driving 4 miles to church. That was a responsibility. It was a joy.
Did everybody know everybody?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Did most everybody, did you go to the Cane Creek?
Cane Creek.
The Baptist Church?
It's, the building that's there now was not the building that we first started when I was a kid. That's not the building. That building was built in 1950. The one that was, my family grew up in, you might say, was in built in 1865, I believe, and almost 100 years old when it was replaced. I believe I'm right on the dates. It might have been 65 years old, but I remember the building very well, and there's a picture of it in the church up there now, if you want to
follow. Sometime I do want to go over and...
The picture of this one that we have up there now was built in 1950. Started in about 48 and was completed in 50, dedicated in 50. And it was all done on free labor. One man hired. One man was on the payroll, and everything else was done was free labor, except the brickwork. We had hired the brick mason. But we didn't have but one carpenter hired. Everybody else donated the time. And that's the way it was built. That building was put up, I think it was somewhere about, cost $12,000 or $14,000. And now I imagine it would cost $100,000.
Was Sunday different from other days?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Were there rules about Sunday?
Yes, it was. There's a lot of things you didn't do on Sunday. You didn't make loud noises. You didn't shoot a gun. You didn't... You could play in the yard, but you couldn't... it was hunting season, and an animal, you know, living in the middle of the country like that, animals, wild turkeys, all kinds of animals then,
You were telling me about Sundays, and you said you could play in the yard, and you mentioned hunting, and you said there were wild turkeys. And
Yes, and you didn't make any loud noises on the Sabbath, you know. You remembered the Sabbath to keep it holy. And that was a rule of thumb. You did no work on Sunday. I mean, we didn't consider doing anything on Sunday. It was like work, because that's, you know, old tradition and from the Bible, I guess. But that one of the commandments says, for the man of the Sabbath day to keep it holy, and we done it.
Did you milk?
Yeah, that we did.
Yeah,
you had to feed the animals, yeah. But as far as getting out in the fields and doing some chores and working in the yard, you didn't do that.
Did your mother fix a big Sunday dinner?
Always, yeah.
Did she do that on Sunday, or did she do it on Saturday?
No, she started on Saturday and finished it up on Sunday. She had any bacon to do, but the vegetables, she'd more like to cook them on the day we ate them, and if we had meats. You know, the old saying was, on Sunday, you kill the chicken and churn, you know.
Yeah.
That was and that was done, you know. I mean, if she had chicken to fry, she'd do that on Sunday. But a lot of the bacon she could prepare before. But back in those days, we didn't have refrigerators.
Oh.
We didn't have, we did have later on, we had ice, you know, ice box. that you put chunks of ice in, yeah. And that was your refrigeration.
Did you cure your own meat?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Whole box full of ice. And it was salted, too. It's amazing now. The cardiologists tell you no pork, no salt. And I don't know why people didn't die young back in those days with cardiovascular disease.
Maybe they worked it off.
I'm sure they did, because I've seen horses. Have you ever seen a horse work real hard and lather up?
Mm-hmm.
Lather on?
Yeah, I've seen
that. Well, I've seen my daddy work in the field till his shirt would lather like that, and it wasn't, you know, it'd be wringing with sweat, and his shirt would get like foaming and lather just like a horse would. So I imagine it was a lot of salt sweated out.
Probably was.
Right. But he lived 71 years and worked hard all his life.
I was going to ask if he farmed all of his life.
Yeah, he farmed all his life.
Now, when you were little, what did you want to do when you grew up?
Well, I wanted to be a doctor.
Oh, you did?
I always did want, and I think maybe I had an inside track, but the opportunities just didn't present itself. And then later on, I had a brother that was a ministerial student at Wake Forest, and when I finished high school, I kind of wanted to go to, they had a good 2-year program in forestry management. I kind of, that caught my attention, but I just never did. Tell you, money was hard to come by even then.
Oh,
and,
yes.
But I'm sure there's been a way provided if I had to make the first step, and I just never did follow up. But that was some of the things in the back of my mind I never did follow up on, mainly because it just wasn't, the funds wasn't available.
But you didn't particularly want to stay in farming then?
I never had no great desire to farm until after I got married. I married real young, and I worked for the dairy. That was back in the late 30s and early 40s. The war years was coming along, and there was a great demand for raw milk. And I've seen all these dairy farms, just about all of them, develop since 1940. But there was a great demand for raw milk, and the dairies had encouraged people that had any amount of milk to sell to let them have it. You could buy the cans and the equipment from the dairy on a, you know, you pay it a little at the time, and then they hired me. This was all done through the county agents, the corporation of the Extension Service, the Conservation Service, and dairies got together, and so they created what they call a barnyard milk route. And I went from farm to farm, picked the milk up in cans, small cans, 5 to 10 gallon cans. And they had no refrigeration, you just put it in cool water. And you could do all right in the wintertime, but in the summertime, I had a lot of that. People and bring them back solid milk. I didn't like that, but at that particular time, I had a desire to go into the dairy farming, and I never did do it. My wife was raised on a dairy farm, and she didn't particularly have any great love for it, so I never did pursue it.
Did a lot of changes occur around that time in the 40s?
Well, yes. Not as fast as they do now, but things were beginning to change. Yeah. Farming had become more mechanized, and the know-how was improved. Now these farms, these people that had cows, you know, and were probably selling butter and milk, you know. Mm-hmm. To local people, you know, it's what they call a butter and milk route.
Mm-hmm.
We had one good dairy farmer in this community on this side, but not in the Cane Creek community. But that's why he made his living. He made butter and buttermilk. He sold butter and buttermilk. And later on, that evolved into a grade A Derek's one of the best in the county, I suppose now, because he's dead now. But they turned that into a big operation, and the numerous people that I hauled or robbed the, what we call barnyard, gray sea milk, because it wasn't refrigerated and it wasn't grade A sanitation, you might say. Now, as the dairy business developed, you went from a barnyard milk to grade A milk, which required inspection, sanitation. You had to have that. You had to have running water, hot and cold. You had to have cement places to milk your cows, and you had to keep it grade A sanitation. Mm-hmm. Now, that all evolved from this barnyard milk. I know of a lot of places I picked up barnyard milk that later on became real nice producing grade A farm, and they made a lot of money. And you could see the change. The market means everything for a farmer. You know, if you got a ready market for your produce, it'll show its face in the standard of living. Is what I was. You see the dairy farmers, you see prosperity, used to, and still will, I think. And as time went by, you'd see the poultry people, and it all amounted to having a dependable income. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you had something you could depend on, not once a year, and like cotton and tobacco, that's a one time a year thing, and if the bottom falls out, you are just out of luck. But we produced quite a few eggs, market eggs, and that was a steady income. I mean, if your production was good and the egg, prices of eggs were good, you could depend on delivering your eggs to wholesale market and getting cash return, and that's money in your pocket. You know, you
did knew. Father begin to sell more as the children grew up and spread out on their own?
Well, that's when we... yes, I would think things begin to change and the markets opened up, and you had a livestock market up here at Hillsborough opened up, which created a market for your cattle, and you had the Farmers Exchange in Durham that opened up a poultry market down there. You had a ready market for your eggs and your poultry, and as these things opened up, then you eased into them, and you've seen your standard of living come up too. This one, because it was simply just a cash flow was there that hadn't been before. Mm-hmm. Of course, as that come along, then everything else changed. I mean, then you felt like you could buy some lines of groceries cheaper than you could raise it, you know, mm-hmm. and that's led on into our society today. So dependent on your supermarket.
That's right.
There's so many children today think, where does milk come from? From A&P, Winn-Dixie.
That's right.
That's as much as they know about.
Don't know anything about cows.
That's right.
Has the area around here, I understand that it has changed a good bit in the last, what,
changed considerably.
Years.
Primarily it was a farm-related, farm-dependency in this community. Everybody farmed. Everybody made their living farming. And now, it's changed to they're in the minority and the public workers in the majority. But of course, we still have one, two, three, about four major dairy farms that's still very much tied to the soil and very successful, I might add. They're very prosperous people, progressive people. Pillar to the neighborhood, you might say. They're very good people to have in the community.
May Crawford mentioned to me that you're still active in the church. Has the church kind of changed too?
Oh, the church is changing probably as fast as the way of life in the community. One thing that older generation dying out, and their beliefs, you know, is pretty well cemented into the past.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And as you get new and younger people and different people, see, at one time you could go to church and everybody was related to everybody else. Mm-hmm. And that's what's changing now. It's just a few still old ties in the church, and their way of thinking is changing, and it's nothing now to go down the road on a Sunday morning and see a person plowing in his garden or mowing his yard or something 25, 30 years ago we wouldn't have thought of doing. You know. And as the influx of new personalities, new people come into the neighborhood, it's changing. Yeah. But I don't think it's really a change. It's something older people resent more than younger people. So I'm sure it's a necessity that we go along with the change, unless you have to bend principles too much. That's the only thing that worries me. If you think change is good, if everybody's done the same thing they did 50, 60 years ago, we'd be in terrible shape. But still, there's some principles that you have to stand by, I think.
When you were a little boy and you went to church, did they talk about those principles in sermons or in Sunday school or the prayers that people offered?
Yeah, they sure did. Put a lot of stock in it. And you got a lot of good hard sermons too from there. You got maybe more, you call it more now, for evangelistic type sermon. You're very aware of hell, okay? And now you don't hear that too much in the churches today. You hear the love side of it and no judgment side.
Mm.
And I think that's
a big change.
That's some change. Of course, it may be for the best, I don't know, but I wonder sometimes.
When you were a child, what would you say was the center of the community? Was it the church or was it someplace else?
Well, we had a school. We had a school nearby, and it burned down in the, I suppose that was in the 50s. And when you lose a school, you lose a certain part of the community. It never was replaced, you know. Community had a school, and it was a focal point for activities and interest. You got a lot of people working together, which was a healthy situation for any community. And once you lose a school, you lose a certain part of your community. And we lost ours, I'd say, in the 50s. And if it hadn't been for the church, it's what held the bond of the community together, I think, the churches. They served, picked up the slack for it. You had the church and the school going for you as a community before. And then there were several years there that we was without the school. Well, we've been without the school since it burned down, but there were several years in between that we didn't have a community building. Then the community building was built, and that's tend to bridge a gap, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have community activities there, and it's a good bonding situation. Good thing to kind of keep people together. We have a community supper up there, you know, and that's especially for newcomers in the community, and it's done a lot of good, I think.
Mm.
It has a tendency to bring people, get together, get acquainted, you know. But still, there's a sad side to all this new influx of people. As far as the church is concerned, and I think everybody's aware of that most people now, when they move from, you know, out in the country, they won't be left alone. They don't want
to.
And we're finding that, too. For every one out of every ten that you get, if they've got any interest in church at all. Now, they may have an interest in the community life, but certainly not in the church. And I think that's bad, and I don't know what's going to change that, but it just seems the attitude is, well, I moved out here to get away from everything, and I want to be left alone. I don't want any neighbors. I don't want to be bothered with anybody.
Now, people who have move down here for privacy, where do they tend to work? Do they farm or do they work?
They work in Chapel Hill, Durham. All around. Some in Research Triangle. Some in Hillsborough. Some in Chapel Hill. Some in Durham.
But they don't work here, though. Well, that is interesting.
I'd say the ratio now for is maybe 50 to 1 for every person you meet out in the community now would be 50 that's not associated with the soil at all. Maybe raise a garden, but not depending on the income. The trend now is horses.
I didn't know that at all.
Everything in this part of the country is going to horses. There's horse farms springing up everywhere. Everybody's got horses.
I had no idea. Is this pretty good country?
It must be. It's attractive. It's going to be, this part of the South is going to be, and this part of North Carolina is going to be from all indications, it's going to be the center for horse activity.
Well, now, do they attempt to raise their own feed, or do they buy it?
No, and that's, they buy everything.
Now, when you were young, did you pasture your own cattle and
we sure
raise
did.
Your own silage?
We raised our own feed, and raise our own grain and our own hay and our own roughage that you feed the animal. Mm-hmm. We didn't know what it was to go to the feed market and buy a bag of feed. That was unheard of. That was ridiculous.
That's a big change, Andrew.
It certainly
buy
is.
Buy feed. Now, and they're not working these horses, I guess.
No.
Pleasure horses.
Now, I'll give you an example. I have a friend of mine. In fact, I'll rent her the pasture out here. I've got three of our horses in my pasture. And she was so glad to get a place for horses to run loose and have grass to eat. But she had 20 horses up there and no pasture whatsoever.
Mm.
And she was buying every bite of food that they ate. Mm. And that can run, I don't know how it runs for 20, but I know what she does here. She brings a couple of bags a week. And that's about 10 to $20 a week, folks. Stuff's $10 a bag, 50-pound bag, and a horse can eat 50 pounds and easy. And I don't see in there, you know, it looks like to me it's a one-way street, everything going out and nothing coming in. So if they can take them to horse shows and ride them in shows, maybe win a ribbon or a trophy or something, but there's not much revenue. In fact, you have to pay an entrance fee to get in a show or horse show, but it's a good means of recreation for a lot of people, and they love it. And once it gets in your blood, my wife's family especially, they love horses. They got a lot of horses around.
Is your wife family still in the area too?
Yeah, she lives. She's not in this community. She's in the White Cross community, which is right down below 54.
Well, you mentioned you married young. Did you have children?
Yes, I've got, that's my brood right up there. I've got three boys. I've got six grandchildren.
Oh.
Three children and six grandchildren.
I saw all the pictures of children. I was thinking they might be grandchildren. Love
that's
them.
My oldest in the middle. And he has four. Three girls and one boy. And this one on the right, my baby boy. And he's got, has two little boys. And this one on the left is just married. He was the last one to get married, and she's going to have twins. We're expecting
is
twins
she?
In March, yeah.
Well, and has most of your family stayed in the area? Or
just this one on the right, the youngest one, has stayed here. And I don't think he'll ever leave from around here. That was a condition of his marriage. He told his wife, she's from the same community my wife's from, and which is just 5 miles below here. But he said, we'll live up here, not in White Cross. That was, and he stuck to it. He loves it outdoors. He's a pretty athletic type fellow, and he enjoys the outside. He enjoys hunting, fishing. And I don't think he'll ever leave. But my oldest boy's in Nashville, and the middle boy's in Wilmington. Can't wait for my wife to retire when we can go to the coast of the mountains. And we won't have to pay a hotel bill.
That's
great. Wouldn't that be great?
What does she do?
She works at the city at Chapel Hill.
Oh, she does?
Yeah. She's in the mailing department with a printing office down there on Manning Drive.
As your children were growing up, did she hold down jobs outside of her home?
Not till this baby was about old enough to start school. She mm-hmm. stayed at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that he got big enough to kind of start school. And his other brother was big enough to look at him, you know, getting him in and out of school and off the school bus. Then she went to work.
Did you stay with the dairy, or have you done other things?
Now, I've never farmed since we've been married. I've always worked at the, I worked at the dairy, and then I went from the dairy to the railroad, basically. I went to work for the railroad, Southern Railroad in Durham. Worked there until as long as work was available. But they gave out in the 50s, in the late 50s. The railroads just about went out of business, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I came to Chapel Hill and went to work for the telephone company and worked there for 25 years. About 20 years with the university, and then they give it away. Is this on tape?
I can take it off if you want, but well, it's on now.
That was the biggest mistake, and that's related to the dam, by the
good,
way.
That's what I was going to say. Well, tell me about this dam. When did you first hear about it, and what did you hear, and what did they
do? It all started in 1977, really. I went to work for the university at the Chapel Hill Telephone Company, which was owned by the university, in 1958. For the next 20 years, you heard the rumor that the university was going to get out of the utilities. The university owned the water, the lights, the telephone, and the sewer, of course. And I heard that threat for 20 years that I was there. And yes, they're going to sell. No, they're not going to sell. And nobody knew why this thing started, but after I went there, they said that you hear this rumor every 3 or 4 years, they'll start this rumor the university is going to get out of the utility business. So they finally did, and they sold the telephone company was sold, and the water was sold, and the power. See, the university had their own generating plant, and still does in Chapel Hill. They generate the electricity for the campus now. They don't have to buy that power from Duke. But they sold the power to Duke, telephone to Bell, and of course they never, actually, the university never did to actually get out of the water business. They formed a company that I think was a fake. They call it Orange Water and Sewer, but that's who the Orange Grove Conservation Committee has been dealing with all these 7-8 years. All right, it's been my contention all along, and I know it's right. The university has never actually been out of the water business because they potentially, on the surface, it appeared that they bought the water along with everything else, but Orange Water and Sewer, no such thing. No, it's really the university in disguise because they still own the lake that the water's in, and it's just not good common sense. You wouldn't buy a piece of property, a building on a piece of property that you didn't own. And I don't, you didn't own the property, but you would buy a house on a piece of property that you couldn't. And the same way with the university. I don't think it. I said all along, they still own the water, but they've got a, which is all right, they've got a different outfit, they don't have the burden of budgeting and all that stuff. Well, they could have done the same thing with the telephone company. They could have appointed a committee to run the telephone company, and it was self-supporting. The last year it operated, cleared over $1 million. I know that from a fact, because I saw the report. And